Welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. Sorry about the shouting, a bit too loud then. And you probably can hear the sounds of two footsteps. That's me on this end, running in Amsterdam, and over in Regent's Park in London, we've got Kevin McQuaid. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm good. I'm very well. Worried past some sleeping pigeons.
You know, it's London if you've got some sleeping pigeons around, eh? And you've just had a mammoth session, haven't you?
I have just done a session that has been scaring me since I was sent it on Monday, and I've done it, and I'm very pleased.
Great.
It's hard.
Great. What was it?
So it was warm up for a couple of miles, so a nice slow jog, and then it was a mile at 5k pace, then a 2 minute jog, then it was 3 miles at threshold, then a 4 minute jog, then a mile at 5k pace, and a 2 minute jog, finished with 3 miles at the threshold, and now I'm done.
Oh,
and it was hard.
Great.
Yeah.
All done on a Wednesday morning. Off the day is yours.
Yeah. Yeah, and because yeah. I was talking to you, I've been trying to weigh out when do I do it before or later, and I like getting it out of the way, so I thought just get up earlier.
Some people might I didn't really introduce you other than your name's Kevin McQuaid. People might not recognise your name. You're a qualified breast practitioner.
Yes.
And also, I'm forgetting you're a primary school teacher too, so you're wearing two hats. On the new format of the show, we want to talk about kind of the effect of running exercise on people's lives. And specifically with this particular show, we wanted to talk about this work and the aspect of running and how that's changed your life and your performance. So we're going to talk a lot about that. We'll actually have a little practical go a bit later, which people can join in with if they're recording, if they're listening while they're running. But I guess the first thing to do is just to talk about you, Kev. How did your... I mean, as a child, did you run when you were a kid? Did you have much relationship with running, a long-term relationship?
Yeah, a little bit. So I love the Olympics, absolutely love the Olympics. One of the reasons I love the Olympics is my first real memory of sport was the 84 Olympics in LA. And I was smitten, as all my family were, by Seb Coe, Steve Cram, Daley Thompson, Carl Lewis. I think I remember seeing Tessa Sanderson and Flaccid Whitbread recently. But the performance that really stuck out in my mind was Zola Budd running barefoot. And I was like, wow, she's amazing. So it inspired me to do the same at my school sports 1500 metres. And I won. So I think my mum probably thought I was a lunatic. I was running around in barefoot in those shoes. So,
did you get any heckles from the crowd?
No, I think I didn't, because I think I was surprised and they were surprised that I won. So that really, and I was never the best runner. I was always like fourth or fifth, so I'd kind of be reserved. But because I won that year, I would have gone to the district sports, but I wasn't allowed to because the teacher's on strike. And now as a teacher, I understand why. the kind of the dynamic about that, but at the time I was furious. But I then used to really enjoy cross country. The first secondary school I went to was very sports orientated, which for me was great because I've always loved being outside. I've always liked taking part in sport. And then I kind of slipped away from doing too much exercise. I played a bit of football, went to university. Didn't fall out of love with sport, but maybe aside from playing football once a week, got more into going out, was really loved going to clubs. It was kind of just as explosion of house music happened, which has a kind of a synergy with running in a countercultural sort of way, you could say. And then I got to, when was this, about the early noughties actually, and Nike first did the 10K run. And there was a friend of mine who said, do you want to do it with me? So I was like, yeah, okay. Did it. It was around Richmond Park. I was like, I'm never running further than that. That is too much, as is always the case. And then I had a really quite, not acrimonious actually, but just painful separation. It was quite soft. And I didn't want to basically just fall into a hole of doing things and, you know, basically not looking after myself properly. And the same friend of mine asked me if I wanted to do a New York Marathon. So I'd never been to New York, and I was like, oh, great, this is going to give me a focus to keep me, just keep me healthy.
Were you a teacher at this stage? Were you?
No. So I left university. I worked in the fashion industry for 17 years, which was a lot of fun. I mean, being in London in the 90s, in my 20s, working in the fashion industry, it was great. I absolutely loved it. I don't regret it. You're selling clothes, you're having a laugh. It doesn't really mean much, but it was a really enjoyable thing to do. So then I did New York, and off the back of New York, I started running a bit more, and this was around the same time that running crews had started popping up. So I think Random had started, but Nike had started doing runs from their shops. So it was just before that. And I'd maybe been put off the club running scene because it felt a little bit too serious, if you like, for me at the time. And I then kind of didn't really get too much into running again. And I had another quite big change with a girlfriend at the time, and this was quite acrimonious. We had a big split. I then had a complete life change, and I decided, I kind of had this epiphany, I wanted to go into teaching. And there is a lot of teaching in my family, but I never wanted to do it. So my dad was a teacher, my aunt's a teacher. And I went into teaching.
It's interesting you say that, because I've done a bit of like school sports coaching, and everyone that speaks to me says, you should basically be teaching. I'm good with kids, I'm good with primary age kids, but you kind of, for some reason there's a block on me and didn't want to do it. I mean, what was that block about? You just didn't want to follow in the footsteps of your family? Did you know why you didn't want to do it initially?
I really don't. I mean, my mum and dad never pushed me into anything. They were always very good at kind of letting me find my own way. And I don't know, maybe I didn't want to because it's what my dad did, so I'm not sure.
Interesting.
But I went into teaching.
How did you feel about the way you started then?
So I had this arrogance that I thought because I was academically quite good, teaching would be easy, and it's not. And knowing something doesn't mean you can teach it. And my first term, up until Christmas, where I was training, was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And I was kind of like touch and go whether I'd be able to continue. And that was really humbling and a really valuable experience. Bringing things back to running, I realised that actually I needed something outside of teaching to give me a bit of peace of mind, to help me switch off. And this is probably one of the best learnings I had when I was learning to teach, is you need something outside of teaching. And running's brilliant for that. And I know that it's something you've found really powerful with what you do with businesses in terms of setting up running clubs to give people Absolutely. That sense of, yeah. And it's always advice I give people who've just come into teaching. I'm like, make sure you've got something outside of teaching. Movement, something movement-based is better. But have a hobby.
Yeah. Keep your focus. So this, how many years ago was this? This was in the...
So this was 2009, 2010. So okay, yeah, 10 years. It takes a year to change. And then I kind of... I was running a little bit, enjoying the social aspect of the running cruise. And I got to 2015, 16, I suppose. And I was getting curious about running a marathon again, because I did New York. And after I finished New York, I was like, I might do it again. I might do a marathon again. I don't know. And I decided to do Berlin. And I was training for Berlin. And as I was training, I'd gone out and had far too much to drink on a Saturday with a group of really close friends of mine. Following Thursday, my calf tore. And I kind of got to this point. So I was, when was this? It was 46, I think. 45, 46, something like that. And I was like, you need to make a choice. What is more important to you? Running and running well, or drinking and drinking in the way that you were? So I was like, I want to run. I love running. So, and I was curious. I thought, I wonder how fast I can go. I'm in my mid-40s. If I train, what other things can I do that will really get faster? And so I kind of sorted my calf out, ran Berlin, and ran it in, I think, 3:25. And I'd done New York in 3:21. So I was like, wow, I've kind of 14 years later, or however long it was, something like that. My time's not that much slower. I wonder how much faster I can go. And so I'd started dabbling in, I'd started meditating, and I'd started becoming really curious about what we can do to keep ourselves well. And in conjunction with that, I was also really curious about, in my teaching practice, what I could introduce to children that they weren't exposed to at a young age, that if they were exposed to it, they may come back to it and they might use it just as something that's helpful for their well-being. Because I think that a lot of the challenge that we have around self-care is we don't get exposed to it at a younger age, and then when we do see it, it's too scary, or it comes to us as too woohoo, and we've not had maybe a really positive experience with it. So that kind of drew me into looking at, firstly, Wim Hof. So I know you said to me your wife had started kind of tinkering with Wim Hof. He is a crazy Dutch man. And he's a bit of a caricature, but he talks a lot of sense. And he's gone out of his way to use science to kind of support his ideas, because he knows that he gets thrown back in his face otherwise.
So what's his premise then? So Wim Hof, he's basically, like, what does he do for the non-initiated, I guess to say? Okay. What is he espousing?
And so his wife committed suicide, and the only way that he could find true peace was by submerging himself in really cold water in Amsterdam, where he lived. And he then became really curious about why that worked. And he realised that part of the process of being able to get in the cold water without breathing. And he then started investigating how cold water and breath were really good for his health, his immune system, his mental well-being. And he's done all these kind of like bonkers feats, going up Everest, getting in water for ages, taking a group of 12 people, injecting them with E. coli, and getting them to breathe so they don't get ill. I found this fascinating. And I was kind of like, I wonder how this can work with me. And at the same time, I'd started listening to this podcast or read this magazine called We Move that had been put on to me by someone I'd worked with in the fashion industry, actually, a guy called Ray. And they're still around, and they were kind of very much interested in the same thing, in human performance based on movement, breath, diet, sleep, modalities that work but are maybe less mainstream. And I got in touch through these guys with this chap called Tony Molina, who's an American ex-Navy SEAL. And he got me doing all this kind of crazy stuff to help sort my posture out, like wearing magnets on the side of my head because I mean, it's quite funny. Like, my best mates would absolutely rip me about this because I'd go out for dinner with a magnet, this little magnet on the left-hand side of my head. And I was like, I don't care if it's placebo, if it worked. And there is efficacy around it, and it did actually work for me. But one of the things Tony got me onto was nasal breathing while running with a mouth guard. And he started explaining to me the health benefits. And so I started doing this, and it was really hard at first, and just on my phone runs, because we get so used to breathing solely to our mouth, there's a lot more resistance if you try and breathe through your nose.
So you're essentially you're improving that muscle because it's more difficult.
Well, you are working your diaphragm more, but effectively, you're properly breathing into the depth of your lungs because you breathe through your nose, your diaphragm works more so than if you breathe through your mouth. So it's a better kind of way to breathe. And so I then started getting really curious about the breath, and you can get lost in all sorts of breathing stuff. I mean, like rabbit holes and like breathe through your nose, breathe through your mouth, breathe fast, breathe slow, and hold your breath, don't hold your breath, all this sort of stuff. And so I was really curious for myself, but also, as I said, for the kids I taught. So I started then doing short breath courses. There's a course that Wim Hof does. There's a course these guys in the States do, more about movement, the art of breath. There's a guy called Dan Brulé who's recognised as being a really interesting breath practitioner. And then there's a chap called Patrick McEwen, who I ended up training with, who was terribly asthmatic, had his asthma not completely cured by massively reduced through the practice of a guy called Konstantin Buteyko, who's a Russian who's now passed away. And Patrick took his ideas and has, a bit like Wim Hof did with old Buddhist breathing, and repurposed them in a way that is more suitable for a contemporary market. And so I trained with him, and then I used some of the breathing techniques that he had, some of the Wim Hof stuff, some of other ancient breathing techniques, cadence breathing, started using not just for myself, but also for the kids at school. Because giving children those tools, as I said, means that they've got the opportunity to self-regulate how they feel.
How did it work then? Was there any...
So I've had two examples of kids that it's been really valuable. So during lockdown, we had school for kids who were either vulnerable or key worker children. And one of the kids who was in school, mainstream school, he's a lovely kid. Mainstream school's not for him. And there's lots of children like that. So he's just quite unsettled. He finds it really hard to focus. And that in itself provides a challenge for him. It's not really his fault. And so there's a breathing practice you can do, which is forced exhales, and you let the inhale happen afterwards. But with the kids, you do it like making a kung fu sound. So on the exhale, they chop their hands down and make a big hua, and let the inhale come in. Which kid does not love doing kung fu? None. So what it does is it gets all that energy out. It does bring him up, but then you can do a really nice calming breath exercise with him afterwards. And he goes into class and he's bang, on it, focused. And he's enjoyed himself. And he feels kind of included. I've also had other instances with kids where they get stressed, worried, nervous about something, as we all do. They begin to hyperventilate, so breathing through the mouth, upper chest, lots of cortisol, lots of adrenaline, feeling uncomfortable, feeling short of breath, and just sitting with them, and getting them to like breathe in through their nose for a count that they can manage, out through their nose for a count that they can manage that's the same, in and out. Some occasions, letting them hold the palms of your hand, so that human contact whilst they breathe slowly really grounds them. And you can see the change in them, like within three breaths.
How does it then work with the run then? So you started looking into this, you started taking on a few things. What did you take on initially? You said the nasal breathing was one thing. Did you start with anything else?
Yeah, so I then, after I'd done the Art of Breath stuff with the guys in America, and then I did the training with Patrick, so the Oxygen Advantage, he trains a lot around movement and performance. So I found that some of the breathing that he teaches, I've used. So I used it this morning, and it's phenomenal in terms of allowing your performance to improve. I mean, you know, when your breathing goes, you're done. When your diaphragm is done, you're done. One of the reasons is it pulls blood from your legs and your arms because it's tired. And another reason for, I was talking to an American athlete about this recently, about do they get trained in breath work? And he said, no. And he said, and I'm surprised really, because running's about oxygen exchange. I'm like, yeah, that's lots of things, but that's one of them. So one of the things that Patrick teaches is, which you can do as a warm-up, is breath holds as you're moving, because it really works the diaphragm. It also pushes, so we move oxygen from our blood into our muscles in the presence of carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide builds up when we're holding our breath, because when we breathe out the carbon dioxide. So before I did the interval session I did today, and this is something we can move on to ourselves, I nasally breathe in the warm-up. The last kilometer, I breathe in and out through my nose, and I hold my breath for 5 steps for 500 meters, then I do it for 10 steps for 500 meters. So I'm beginning to work the diaphragm. I'm beginning to push the oxygen into my muscles. I'm priming my body, ready to move. Then, so before I did the interval, so I've warmed up the diaphragm, getting my muscles all nice and warm, and then I'll stop, I'll breathe in and out through my nose, and I'll hold. And then I'll walk, I'll jog, I'll run, I'll stride. Then I'll stop, I'll take 6 sips of air through my nose, pause for 30 seconds. Do that 5 times. So what that's doing is it's supercharging your body with oxygen. And the research behind it says that any more than 5 in, it starts going downhill. So I find if I do that,
right, okay,
whenever I start anything, it feels so easy. So I then have to be careful, because otherwise I'd die after about a mile. Yeah. Yeah. So we had a 5K road race for a Serpentine of our own for recently. I haven't done a race for like 18 months. And I flew off, and then I was like, oh, shit, I'm going too fast. I have to slow down. So that's really helpful at the beginning. Then in between intervals, I use something called, so I'll when I stop, I'll breathe in through my nose, out through my mouth to get the CO2 out. And then there's something called a physiological sigh, where you take 2 inhales through your nose, breathe out through your mouth. That kind of pushes the air sacs in your lungs open so you can get the oxygen in so you can get that flowing back around your body. And then when I've done five of those, I'll breathe nasally, do the next set. Then at the end, and this is something I'm quite pleased that I've heard a little bit more of recently, I will do breathing exercises, because if you imagine you've done any hard run, your body's been in a state of stress for however long you've been doing the running. The best thing, and the nicest way you like it, I've heard it compared to, is if you see two animals chasing one another, lion chasing an antelope, whatever happens at the end, the lion catches the antelope or it doesn't, the animals sit down. And one of the biggest challenges we have actually for everyone is chronic stress that we don't release. Now, in the short term, if you do a hard running session, you're deliberately putting yourself in a position of stress, which you're going to adapt from. So what you want to do is tell your body you've stopped. The best way of doing that is by breathing either coherently, so same inhale, exhale through your nose, or a slightly extended exhale. Because that's when you extend your exhale, you slow your heart rate and you kick in your rest of the digest, your parasympathetic side. You tell your central nervous system, we're done, we're stopped, we're calming. And
right, okay.
So I was coaching the kids last night. We did it at the end. And again, you can see at the end of the session, they love it. They're having a chat, they're doing the stretches. It's like, right, minute, we're just going to breathe.
Yeah, okay.
And it also lets you kind of program in those movement patterns that you have just been carrying out. So your body's learning when you're being quiet in your breathing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting because it is, like you say, it's something, it's obvious, breathing is very important to us as runners. And yet, the only training I think I do for my lungs is to sort of do some intervals where I'm in a different, breathing capacities. That's how I think I'm training my breathing, by varying my effort. But there's got to be a way, we go in the gym and we lift weights to improve certain muscles, the muscle of, or the process of breathing, is something that we don't really pay attention to. Do you know, obviously there's evidence out there for its benefit. Has anyone, kind of use this to affect, other than obviously yourself, you're running faster. Has there been any other teams or anything making use of this?
Yeah, so very interestingly, with the Olympics, so the US track and field team haven't done badly, but there's always in the press, you see, they're moaning about the men's track team because they weren't in the individual gold medals. The best ever track performance from any track team in the history of the Olympics came in 1968 in Mexico City from the men's US Olympic team. And they'd employed a breath coach, a guy called Carl Stowe, written a really good book called Doctored Breath, which you can download for nothing on the internet. And he wasn't a doctor. He was a choir master who got fascinated by breathing techniques for singing. And he then became employed to look after veterans who had emphysema in hospitals. He was so successful in improving their living conditions. So you don't put emphysema into remission, and you can't regain the lung capacity that's lost because the emphysema has taken it. But what you can do is improve breathing patterns so you use what capacity you have far more effectively. He did that so well, US Track and Field employed him, and they were brilliant. And that was the Olympics with the Black Power salute. I think Lee Evans, I think his name was, the guy on the 400. Yeah. Sonia Richards Ross, the 400 meter US runner. I think he was in London, because Christina Morgan won it, in either Atlanta or Sydney. Sonia Richards Ross, nasal breeze. Djokovic uses Wim Hof stuff. I think Federer does some breathing bits. Tennis players, their fitness is phenomenal.
3 or 4 hours, isn't it? So many surges.
Yeah. And what? So there is efficacy for it. And it amazes me. So whenever I buy a running book, I have a game. And it's like, right, I'm finding this stuff about breathing. Because there'll be nothing in here about breathing. And invariably there isn't.
Yeah. So how do you, like you said, there's a lot of different stuff out there. So how, I mentioned your website and stuff and what you're doing, but how do we learn then? What can you point us to start thinking about this sort of stuff properly?
So, yeah, go to my website, Breathe to Move. I'm going to put some stuff on there specifically for running and also for general well-being. But it's quite, I mean, it is a rabbit hole. It's quite hard. So it's taken me 3 years of reading, research, and I'm genuinely really interested. So I've spent quite a lot of time. And I think that what I would say is start doing some nasal breathing for a short portion of a run. That's easy. Just getting used to doing that. Because like anything, it's a practice. You're not going to be able to go and do an hour straight away. It's going to be awful. And then you're not going to do it. It's a bit like people who decide to do marathons do very little training or the wrong sort of training. And then they hate it because it's awful for them. So I usually say to people, do 10 minutes of nasal breathing in the middle of a run. And do it slow and do it easy. And run to the speed that you can. Because you will right. slow down. But what you're doing is the quality of air you're getting is better.
Right, okay.
But Sir Patrick McEwen's very useful to look at. So he teaches the Oxygen Advantage. He's the guy that I learnt with. He's got a lot of good advice. But starting slow and building it up. Because the reason nasal breathing is so good, if you imagine our lungs work by air coming in, oxygen coming out of the air, going into the blood, carbon dioxide coming out of the blood, going into the lungs and being breathed out. Now, because of gravity, most of our blood is in the base of our lungs. So that's where we want to get the oxygen to. If you breathe through your mouth, it's harder to get the air into the base of your lungs. And it's like your mouth, if you're running, if you want a lot of air exchanged quickly when you're running hard, yeah, you breathe through your mouth. But if you're not running hard, you want that air to be warm. You want the air to be moist. And you want to pull it to the base of your lungs. You're not doing that to your mouth. Breathing through your mouth, it's going to be harsh, cold. You're going to use your neck, your shoulders. Breathe through your nose. You kind of get your diaphragm to pull it down to the base of your lungs where the blood is. And then it gets in the blood, gets around your body.
Perfect. Well, I'm conscious that my Bluetooth headphones are about to run out. I want to have a little practice of the stride pattern you've mentioned. I'm going to stop my watch and let's have a little crack at a pre-session routine. So you mentioned you would nasally breathe the warm up, and then you'd come to this point. So you should almost like talk me through it now, and then we'll go through it together.
Okay, so you've got a stretch in front of you that you could, it's about 50 meters at most.
Yeah, perfect.
Good. Right, so what you're going to do, I'll explain it and then I'll talk you through it. So we're going to breathe in and out of our nose 3 times. Third time, you're going to hold. As you hold your breath, you're going to walk, you're going to jog, you're going to run, you're going to stride. Then you're going to stop and you're going to take six sips of air for your nose. So really short. That extends the hole. Then we're going to breathe nasally for around 30 seconds. We're going to repeat it. Okay?
Right. Okay. So in that nasal breathing, do I run in that 30 seconds or do I stand still?
No, stand still.
Okay,
so
you're giving your body
time to let the carbon dioxide to push the oxygen out into your muscles. All right?
Okay. Okay.
So, are you ready?
Yeah!
Are you smiling? Get a smile on your face. Lovely. Right, you've got an infectious laugh, Sean. Okay, so let's breathe into our nose. and out, and let just let the air out through your nose. That's one. In through your nose, and then out through your nose. In through your nose, out through your nose, and hold. Now start walking. Start jogging. Now start running. And start striding. 3, 2, 1, stop. 6 sips. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then just breathe in and out through your nose. We're going to do this for 30 seconds. The first one always feels really easy, which is kind of nice. And so at the moment, what you're doing is that carbon dioxide is changing with the oxygen. It's pushing the oxygen into your muscles. You're oxygenating your muscles. You're warming everything up. You're telling your body, we are going to exercise, and we're getting our muscles in the best possible place to do that for us. Okay? Right.
Cool. Okay.
Ready to start again. Yeah. So in through your nose.
Yeah.
And just let the air out. One. In through your air, nose, and out. In through your nose, and out, and hold. Walk. Jog. Run. And stride. Right, now push. 4, 3, 2, 1. Stop. And 6 sips of air in and out for your nose. Okay, and then just breathe slowly through your nose. Probably feeling a little bit more stressful on your system now. You might be feeling a little bit lightheaded. Your body's working a bit harder. It's getting all more ready. And then we'll do one more set. Okay. Got another 10 seconds. So, last set. In and out. In and out. In and out. And hold and walk. And now jog. And now run. And now stride. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, stop. 6 sips of air. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. If you're feeling a bit too lightheaded, when you breathe in through your nose, exhale through your mouth. Once. Okay. Do you want to do two more? Or are you happy with that?
That's good to me. My battery's now at 4% and slowly heading down. But that was, I want to say one thing actually. My watch, I've got these on his Garmin 254 Music. And I feel like quite alive after that, to be honest. It's really good. Every time I did one of those, my watch thought I was having a heart attack. And it said incident detected. I had to keep it said calling phone, incident detected. I was like, oh god, no, stop, cancel. So yeah, certainly maybe work in a different way. My phone, my watch isn't used to. So just a warning to anyone that tries to do that with a heart rate monitor.
I would say if you've got a heart condition, you shouldn't be doing that.
Right, okay. I feel great though. That actually, and it sounds weird, but in all honesty, I feel like my eyes feel open sort of thing. It feels like I'm enlivened about that. Really good. Wow. I'm definitely going to give it a crack. So doing a little bit of nasal breathing and doing those four. You usually do five, would you say, normally before a run?
Do five, yeah. And then the other really big one, I'd say, that when you finish your run, do six, breathe in for a count of six, breathe out for a count of six, you know. This is the stuff I'm going to do some videos and put them on my website for that sort of thing, because that is massive in terms of switching your body off at the end of a run. I think that's something that is really easy to do. You can do it in the shower. Yeah. If you're having a shower after you run, do it then.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. And remind me the website one more time, Kevin.
So it's breathe to move, BREATHETO, move.org.
Okay, perfect. Great, so that's been fantastic. And I'm hopefully going to get us doing a few webinars together with some companies we work with, and that should be quite exciting. And,
yes.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, lovely to have you along, Kevin. And we will chat again. I forgot to ask you. I didn't actually clarify whether it had made an impact on your running. We talked a bit about what it was, but we didn't. Has it changed?
Yeah. So my marathon times come down to, I did 2:56. I did the virtual London marathon, I'm like, and I'm running. I did Hampstead Heath Park Run this week, and I came second, which for me was amazing. I was beaten by the women record holder. Yeah, I mean, my time wasn't, it was nowhere near the record, but I'm like, for a 48-year-old man to beat all the other men running it, I was like, I was quite, my ego got a bit boosted that. So, yeah, I've shifted up to, in age grading, national level, and I was like, a lot lower than that. So, yeah, it's made a big difference.
Great stuff. Great. So hopefully a nice quality sub-3 London this October.
Yeah, I hope so. I will be disappointed if I don't, but you never know. Yes, a quality sub-3.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, great stuff. Well, great to chat. We'll I'll look forward to chatting again soon.
All right. Take care. Cheers.